My name is Kat Paz, and it's time for Taking Care of Business with a topic dear to my heart, startups. Startups are exciting, and there's so much opportunity when starting out. But there's the obvious drawbacks like less income, burning the midnight oil, a lot more than usual actually, learning how to sell if you have never done it before, building relationships, doing the books, and I'm not talking about Excel or shoeboxes here. The stats on the failure of small business startups are well known, and sometimes it could be your unique baptismal fire to success. That doesn't mean you cannot try again. Here with me in the studio is Alan Manley, CEO of the Universal Business School in Sydney, and we're going to talk about how to bounce back after a startup failure. Welcome to Taking Care of Business, Alan.
Thank you, Kate.
This is a great topic. We've never talked about it before. We always talk about how to not fail, but I guess some businesses, it's inevitable. And as I mentioned before, startups are dear to my heart and sounds like the same for you.
Indeed. And I'm so old, I can boast that I've failed a number of times. In fact, I think I've failed one time less than I've succeeded. So I'm living on that one. I'm living on the last one. So here's hoping some of your listeners probably take heart from hearing from someone that you can actually bounce back. And indeed, most successful entrepreneurs have a few scars, a few nightmares. And when I was asked to write an article about how to bounce back after a startup failure, I was a bit tortured as to which one to talk about. But I drifted into the thinking that really the startup almost becomes like your baby, to be emotional about it. And that took me down the line of thinking about emotional loss. And that drifted into the five stages of grief. I'm sure many of your listeners know about being Kubler-Ross.
Yeah.
And that whistles into, you know, the usual, but it's always easy to talk about it after the event, I found. But one of the first things you do is just human nature. It's well researched. When things start to go wrong, that you're in denial. It can't be that bad. It just can't be that bad. And I'm sure many of your listeners realize this is the truth. When you hear some bad news, how many times you've heard someone scream out, "Oh, no." Well, that's denial in action.
Oh, and, yes.
Then, of course, you go to the realization that saying, "Oh, no," isn't going to cut it. So you get very angry, and you probably start feeling angry with yourself. A certain amount of justification there is, after all, you got yourself into it. And but usually the claim is it's unfair. The competition have no ethics. The product is fantastic. The customers are idiots. You've been cheated and lied to, but that's business. So you have to conclude that life is not fair, and business is particularly unfair. And the unfairness of business will often be hidden behind the mantra of business is business. If someone says to you that business is business, rest assured, they're possibly doing you a favor, because it's not fair, it's not even, it's opportunistic. In fact, it sounds a bit like you when you're saying, "I'm going to set up this business and no one's going to be as clever as me." But that will get you through the anger. Because after all, you were going to take advantage of everybody in the market. All the competitors were a little bit dumber than you, and the customers were going to love you.
I think it's good. It's fair to say it's a game, you know. That kind of makes you realize, you know, nothing personal.
Yeah, a bit like the mafia. Yeah, nothing personal. It's like, yeah, it is nothing. Interesting enough, I was asked recently about something about failing in business. And I did say that one of the things to really be aware of your startup, it's not a baby, it's not a child, it's not even a living thing, it's just a business. Richard Branson always says with businesses, they're just like buses. There'll be another one coming along shortly. And so that gets us through business is business. And of course, a bit like a cornered rat, you start doing almost anything to keep the business. And Kubler-Ross calls it bargaining. And that's pretty much where you cut price and you slash around, and there's all the things that are perfectly, perfectly normal. And you see it every day. You know, the second annual sale, in a clothing store. Well, there's a little bit of bargaining going on there. They're wondering where the cash is coming from. They need yours. And so, a bit like a cornered rat, you continue on. Then I guess the sad bit, and this is where people can really lose the plot a little, and very sadly, that depression. you must start to get sad. No matter what it is, you're just normal. If you put your emotion into it, well, when it fails, sometimes the reverse to the euphoria that was experienced when you set up and it started to go and all your friends said it's great and we knew you'd do it, you realise, I've done it. And it's sometimes wild swings of foolish thoughts. And that's when the less subtle strike out at everyone. Usually they're striking out at themselves. And then the entrepreneur takes over. And that's when you get acceptance that maybe it was something you did wrong. Maybe the timing was wrong. And maybe it was just the timing. Maybe it wasn't the product for you. And then if you're really lucky and you keep reading constantly about business, you'll see there's lots of folks who have been very successful and they've done yet another business and it doesn't take off. So it's really just like the business is not personal. Failure in business is not personal either. It was you were just the manager and you happen to be the funder at the same time, which can be a bit tacky.
Yes.
So at the end of the day, you lean back and then the entrepreneur takes over from that rational person you could have been and you become irresistibly optimistic again. And before you know it, there's another bus coming along and you know that's the business opportunity for you.
Can I just pause on that really quickly? Because before we get on the next bus, you mentioned one of the signs that startups fail, and that was the cornered rat where people reduce their prices. And at that point, you're entering negotiation, so probably not thinking clearly. What are the other signs of that?
The signs, yes, the cornered rat is when people start, well, this is a really complex question in some ways, is when things aren't going well, what do you do? And you were saying before you're an accountant. Well, the saddest thing to do is start slashing prices, but sometimes it's what you have to do. Sometimes getting rid of stock or just getting some cash in is you're buying time. Now, everyone mocks that, but there's plenty of major corporations that bought time. Recently, we saw Qantas buy time. They shut the place down and prayed. If COVID went long enough, there would be no Qantas. They were like a cornered rat. They just said, we'll stop flying planes and we'll just send them to America for storage, can you believe? No one predicted that. They were buying time like a cornered rat. Now they bounced back, or they're bouncing back. It could have been that they went broke. Other airlines, we saw Virgin slash prices, do everything. They were a cornered rat and they did go broke. It's sometimes in the timing. That's why I encourage people who have had a failure to not personalise it. You have very little control over the environment in which your business is operating. Very little. I speak from someone in the education export industry where the borders are closed. Well, no one has ever told me that the Australian government would close borders. I've been in business for a long time. No one had ever thought of it. So a bit like cornered rats, we hunkered down and reduced costs and reduced the price to customers to an extent. And then we sort of sat there and one day sat there with one of those dreaded people called accountants and worked out, how long can this last? And we figured that the borders must open before we ran out of money. That was the entrepreneurial response. So was it logical? Sort of. It turns out it's true. But winners are grinners. But if we'd gone for another year or two, I think half Australia would be closed.
That is absolutely true. There's, you know, those kind of environmental knocks have been unprecedented, that word again. And it is, because no one would have thought the world would shut down like that.
Not in my lifetime, I've been in business for well over 40 years. In no risk profile or risk analysis did I even see borders closed.
Yeah. And with business failure, most people think that it's completely burnt out and there's nothing to salvage. But there's still life in it, and that life is you, the entrepreneur.
Well, a friend of mine lost a couple of $1 million in a quick hit.
Oh.
And he thought it was, it was dearer than his university degree, but he said he learned a lot more. So it was value for money. So it was an education cost. Now, there's a true entrepreneur. I had to admire him.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, experiential learning is invaluable, I must say.
Yes, quite often you see successes. They sometimes come from a training environment they don't realise and I live in the western suburbs of Sydney. They have a very high number of entrepreneurs. The University of Western Sydney boasts that more of its graduates become self-employed entrepreneurs than other universities, and it could be true. But what you notice is those graduates come out of small family businesses, and they're all builders or something like that. And those kids don't seem to realise that the family culture was entrepreneurial, that the family culture was you worked extra hours, and sometimes mum or dad had to work longer and harder. They were already been inculcated to be entrepreneurs, and that was their learning experience. That was their training. They went to uni, but they also had home trained, I guess you could say, homeschooled on being an entrepreneur.
That is true. I am a daughter of two entrepreneurs. I suppose it was something that I thought that's the norm for them to disappear on weekends and sometimes at night. But that just helped me to create my own culture and realize boundaries are limiting. So it's important to know, I guess there's some boundaries, like now there's entrepreneurs experiencing a lot of burnout because of the last 24 months, where just feels like it's ongoing.
Very, very prone. I watched, and I'm not alone, I've read articles about it, that people in small businesses, particularly because you interface with them, you can see them, they were finding, in Sydney at least, I can verify, the last 6 months has been more people depressed. That there's just no end to this, there's no end. And what with the way it's been managed, that daily updates of death is hardly inspirational for people. So I notice the authorities have started backing off a daily update of death. People have been dying for quite a while, I believe.
Yeah, well, that's it. Now we're
talking of living with it.
Yeah, that's right.
Now the entrepreneurs will come back. You watch them all.
I believe in that. I've got my soft spot, huge belief in startups, because that's when innovation and change happens. How can you share of other ways a startup can bounce back?
Having done it a couple of times, probably I find it really inspirational to read about other entrepreneurs. And they all seem to be, whilst the image of entrepreneurs is bubbly and arrogant and self-important, if you read their autobiographies and such, you actually find a lot of them are pretty, that's really a facade. It's part of their sales pizzazz that they put that off, and they're quite deep thinkers, and they've all got a journey. And it's usually from how they handled failure. And one of the things, and it sounds really twee, is you have to decide whether you'll give up or not. And some people would observe, my wife being one, that it's pointless trying to never change them. You may as well just go with it. And she's done all right out of it, I guess. But others, there's been a long journey, shall we say, of hits and misses, a lot of disappointments. You become very self-sufficient a lot of ways in thinking. You do conclude that being an entrepreneur in some ways is quite lonely, that you will be the only one that has the passion for your dream.
Oh, yes. I used to say I was sitting in a fishbowl when I used to have an office while my friends were out at parties.
Yep.
So that lonely journey is real. And then you also sound a bit weird in the way you talk, but there is an end goal, which is what people don't see.
Yeah, I guess it's almost like a cult in some ways. You either believe it or you don't. And you have to believe in yourself, and you're part of that. And then you find as the years go by, you're mixing with people of a similar belief mechanism. And so you go to meetings, a bunch of self-employed people, they're all entrepreneurs. And interestingly enough, over the years, you see there, it's like sometimes there's a sine wave of wealth accumulation. I boasted to my son recently, the one thing I got right, son, was to get richer as I got older. Thank God. if I kept failing as I got older, we were going to be in serious trouble. Son, your education was up for grabs. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you say intuition is one of the reasons why entrepreneurs keep going, despite everything?
I don't know that. My wife says it's an insecurity. That she says you're driven by. She thinks the entrepreneurs are driven by self insecurity, that they have to prove something to themselves. And if you go back in their background, invariably there's something there that drives them. They have to prove something to themselves, and that's their biggest audience, and that's the most critical audience. It's have I been good enough and have I succeeded enough? So there's that driver, and quite often you see it in autobiographies.
Now, I want to hear one of your stories of failure and bounce back in a few minutes, if that's possible.
Okay, well, I took it upon myself in, shall we say, an entrepreneurial dip in my career. And there I was sitting at home with all my friends, me, and I concluded the next thing in the world was going to be the environment. And this was 25, 26 years ago. And I thought, you know, that the world, they're going to start thinking about sustainability, because there was a lot of industrial activity. A lot of industrial activity was more in the line of mining. If you analyze mining or farming, mining is when you take a substance or an activity and it can't be replaced easily. So you make the assumption it's non-renewable. And farming, one concludes, is if you look after the soil, you'll plant a crop and you'll get another one next season because you've looked after the soil. That's farming. So I only say that. That took me into agricultural investments. And so I got myself involved in the tea tree plantation. I thought this was good. And, of course, you being an accountant, you realise it was tax deductible. So needless to say, I wasn't alone. And we planted a few million tea trees. And we then learnt, I say humorously, that tea tree oil is wonderful stuff. It's a natural antiseptic. It's also burns your skin if you use too much of it. And that subtle learning of how much is just too much is a bit like any other substance. It takes a lot of care. But anyway, we were into toothpaste. And if you put this antiseptic in a toothpaste, the world would be a better place. So we had tea tree oil, millions of trees, they all happily grew. We employed farmers, we bought farms, and then we approached the toothpaste people. And of course, we were pieing away. If only one toothpaste person would say yes, we would be rich beyond our dreams. So we did the presentations, all went well. They were convinced, the scientists were convincing. So they put in their first order. And it was for more tea tree oil than Australia has ever produced in one year. So whilst we were worried, would they take all of our crop? They couldn't take it because we couldn't produce enough. So we ran around town and said to everybody, why don't we cartel? Why don't we get together? And even then, it would have kept less than 1 month's run of toothpaste in Australia. So the toothpaste people disappeared. They said, well, you're not big enough. So that was everything just collapsed after that. It just, the dream imploded. The dream imploded.
Wow.
How could we get it so wrong? Millions of dollars, hundreds of investors. Oh, it was a living nightmare. So I slunk off from that, hid under the bed for a couple of months, and finally snuck out and worked out what I had learnt to do was to raise money. I learnt how to inspire investors to raise money. And with that knowledge, I then set up a managed investment scheme to invest in education. And that, 20 years later, is the business I have now.
That is an amazing, amazing story. I'm sure everyone is going to take something from that. And I could hear the process of the cornered rat. I don't like rats, but I could hear the process of it and how you did your best. But despite everything, that's just how it is. We've run out of time, unfortunately, but thank you so much, Alan, for being here with me.
My pleasure.
And it was really an awesome interview.
Thank you, Kat. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you next time.